Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle, always with me. Even if we have some difficult games to watch, right, buddy? We're still going to be here after those damn games.
Yeah, absolutely.
This week, definitely a hard game.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because I think if you told everyone that that was only going to be a 6-point loss, we'd probably been feeling pretty good about that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I think people wanted to see a lot more progress on the offensive side of the ball than we got. And we're going to get into the office and maybe why we didn't see that progress. And if we still think we're going to see that progress, we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, I do think, I mean, God, not to, it's kind of funny. I said that I see a lot of Bears fans, I think, right now who are kind of reverse coping. There are a lot of people kind of in the mood that Travis is in where it's like, look, no, I made excuses for these fuckers too many times. Yeah. So I refuse in this moment in time to possibly accept what actually looks like the rational explanation for a lot of things, which is that it's early. It is a rookie quarterback. It is a rookie wide receiver in Roma Dunze's case. It's a new offensive coordinator for everybody. It's a scheme that everybody's learning. It's September. You know, we talked about how teams don't really do the preseason anymore. It's the worst fucking offensive environment in almost 20 years. Scoring through the first two games is down, I believe, they just said officially to the lowest point, or at least passing yards per game or total yards per game, down to the lowest point since 2006 right now. So everything we're going to talk about with the Bears offense later, you got to keep in context that, like, it is tough sledding out there for pretty much everybody who isn't the Chiefs and, weirdly enough, the motherfucking New Orleans Saints. It turns out that the missing ingredient for Derek Carr all these years was just play action. Who knew? Anyways, I think people are so determined not to let themselves fall into that trap of making any kind of rationalization for what's going on, that we're almost being, I think, overreacting a little too much to what was, in the end, a 6-point loss on the road to a team that right now I would consider to be the best overall team in the American League, or in the American, or in the AFC.
In the American League. In the AL. League. The best team in the AL, Kyle.
The AFC. Now, I'm not picking them to go to the Super Bowl over the Chiefs. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. But, like, if you were to look at top to bottom, a 53-man roster, I think Houston's got the best one over there right now, and a guy who's currently a top-5 quarterback. So it's a 6-point loss on the road to that. There's a lot of winnable games, and we'll get into that here in a second, too, coming up on the schedule. I do think it's important to, you know, I won't pretend I wasn't dooming a little bit during the game. Travis was dooming a little bit. I mean,
hell yeah.
There is nothing like that familiar Bears loss where you know the offense isn't going to do it, even though they just need one fucking drive to do it. It's like, you know, it's like being a baseball fan and watching your team just struggle to score runs for like a week. You feel like you're slowly drowning. It's miserable. So there was dooming during the game, but I think it's important to keep perspective here. And one of the reasons I think it's important to keep perspective is that right there in Houston might be the best offense that we expect the Bears to go up against all year.
Yeah,
it's up there. And this defense held. They clamped down in the second half. For the second straight week, Matt Eberflus, my biggest complaint about him as a defensive coordinator very often has been, it used to feel like they came out with a very strong defensive game plan and got figured out late. And he also didn't adjust very well. 2 weeks in a row, felt like there was a bit there where the other offensive coordinator was taking advantage of their speed and hitting them with misdirection, had them a little bamboozled. I thought, here we go. And then it didn't happen. They fucking clamped down. And that's like I said, that's the toughest offense, at least for the next 10 or so weeks that we've got on the schedule, might be the toughest offense we face all year. And they were up to the task. So you should be in almost every game from here on out with this defense. So I think that's why it's important to keep.
Definitely feels like those scripted plays at the beginning of the game are the worst plays for this Bears defense, right? And after that, it feels like once you have to actually start calling a game, there's almost nothing you can do against
it. It feels like for the first time in a while that, like I said, Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator, Now, I still got gripes about Matt Eberflus, the head coach. We'll talk about that in a little bit, too, as far as other coaching issues on this team right
some
now.
Some very funny decisions in this game.
But Matt Eberflus, the defense coordinator, is currently winning the battle of punch-counterpunch. I agree with that, which has been a weakness of his in the past. And I do want to just talk about this defense a little bit, you know, so that it's not all negative. So we acknowledge that this is a very good secondary. You know, Tyreek Stevenson seemed like he was struggling a little bit with Nico Collins, which no shame in that. I think Nico's a very good wide receiver. But I noticed that they adjusted on the fly there, too. They finally switched it up, put Tyreek on Diggs, which actually seemed like he matched up with Diggs pretty well, put Jalen on Nico and clamped things down. Kyler Gordon has been all over the field again. This secondary is everything that we thought it was going to be so far. Yep. You know, the Titans have a decent wide receiver core. I don't know what they've got at quarterback. I do know what they've got at quarterback. That's a dumb thing to say. But the Titans have a decent wide receiver core. The Texans have a great wide receiver core. They've put the clamps on both pretty well. So the secondary is everything we thought it was going to be. And I think we can conclusively say the defensive line's performance week one was not a fluke.
Yep.
They got real. I mean, it wasn't as instant pressure as they were getting versus Tennessee, but like it worked the way they drew it up. We said this secondary should buy you 2.5 seconds of cover. Then the pass rush needs to be able to get home. And that's what it felt like. CJ's first read wasn't there. His second read wasn't there. By the time he's getting to his third read, then the pressure's getting home. And that was, you know, that was the Achilles heel of this defense last year. They embarrassed bad quarterbacks all year long, but you'd get to facing Jordan Love, you'd get to facing Justin Herbert, you know, and he was, your first read wasn't there, second read wasn't there, but he had time to find number three, number four. This year he doesn't have time to get to number three and number four. Darrell Taylor, still looking great. Andrew Billings is eating right now as a pass rusher. That's we learned last week with Tavondre Sweat, that's a pretty tough fucking deal, guys, when you've got a 330-pounder, 340-pounder that is getting that much of a push as a pass rusher. So yeah. That's a cool development. What do you want to say about the defense right now?
Yeah, I mean, you said I'm kind of pessimistic this season. I'm like, I feel like I'm just in the opposite position of a lot of Bears fans, where I just kind of want good football again. You know, we've been without we had never really experienced truly awful Bears teams, or at least it had been a long time, right? You'd have to go back to like maybe Wanstead. Like Dick Geron had some very uncompelling teams, but they weren't just like truly awful. It had been a long time since I saw that, and then the end of the Trubisky era and then the entire Justin Fields era really felt like we were just watching bad football on both sides of the ball. So for me, you know, I want to see a full team game. So I really appreciate watching a truly fantastic defense, even if the offense is struggling like it is. And yeah, like you said, this secondary is very clearly, if not the best, the second best secondary in the NFL right now, top to bottom. There's nobody you can go at. Jaquan Brisker has also been taking that next step. I wanted to give him a shout out because we've derided him a little bit. He is locking it down on his side as well.
To be clear, we've never really derided Jaquan Brisker so much as a player, so much as we find him to be a relentlessly annoying person.
Well, I guess just
the and value I still feel of the pick. I still feel the, yes, yes.
We've been annoyed that he was such a high pick, but
yes,
everything's working together, and they are all young. They are all, you know, under contract. Like it's a very exciting situation there.
The contrast line
that last year I talked a lot about token pressure. I guess we have a great secondary. Let's just get enough pressure to where this guy has to make a decision in under 3.5 seconds, you know, like just make him throw it into the teeth of that secondary and maybe something good will happen. We are getting more than token pressure this year. Like Dexter, Billings, Sweat, and Taylor is a lethal combination out there. If it's 3rd and 9, if it's 2nd and long, you know, they're going to pin their ears back and they cause some significant chaos here, even for CJ Stroud, yeah, who ended the night, you know, with a pretty decent line. That really belies how absolutely harried he was in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there was nothing there for him.
Yeah, well, I mean, you talked about, you know, Caleb kind of blinked first in this matchup. You know, Caleb got frustrated. But, I mean, in some ways, did he blink first, or did he just have a little bit better or a little bit worse ball luck? Because, I mean, CJ, first play of the game, Sanborn tipped the ball. That very well could have been an interception. And then Kyler Gordon was, what, one tiny bobble away from a pick six. So, I don't know that you could even really say. I mean, CJ definitely was overall, he had the better results. He, you know, he had the better offensive line. He, you know, I don't want to say that CJ Stroud played a particularly bad game. I think against what is, in my opinion, a top flight Bears secondary, CJ was mostly patient, mostly did what you have to do against a defense like that. But there were a couple balls that, you know, it's a whole different ball game if Kyler Gordon just doesn't let that thing touch the ground just a little bit.
There's something to be said for if Caleb was up 17-16 at some point.
Yeah.
Do these horrible passes that he threw, decisions even happen?
Yeah, I think the kid stayed patient until, you know, the third or fourth time that it was in a row, basically, where it felt like it was 2nd and 15, 3rd and 15. And then I think we've watched enough Caleb Williams at USC where it's like, he's going to try something eventually. The kid, he wants to make a play so bad. But we'll get to Caleb here in a second. So I really don't want to get lost talking about this defense. Because the other thing I wanted to say, another guy that we were kind of critical of, that we've been critical of, and there, you know, still a long way to go in the season, he could regress a little bit. But right now, Tremaine Edmonds looks like the dude that you paid. He looks like that guy that last year in Buffalo. The middle of the field is not open. There has not been jack shit to a tight end in either of the two games so far. He is roaming sideline to sideline. Me at that play, we called it the Urlacher play on the podcast last week. That ridiculous third down stop. And he had a couple plays Sunday night where I thought he was just all over the field, sideline to sideline. Tremaine Edmonds has been outstanding. TJ Edwards has been outstanding. Sanborn, you know, he really hasn't been in a lot. They stayed in nickel a lot against the Titans. They were in base a little bit more against Houston. But when Sanborn was in, Sanborn, you know, had that big tip. He had a couple nice moves too. And coverage is not supposed to be Jackie's game. So I was impressed there too. It's a solid unit. There's really not an obvious weak link on that defense right now. And again, this was as good of an offense as you can expect to see probably all year. Like, I don't know that I would, like, we're going to see down the road, we're going to see the Packers when Love is back. We're going to see the 49ers. We're going to see the Lions. I don't know that, I don't think any of those are necessarily and automatically better than what Houston's got right now. And so that's as good as it's going to get. And they locked down pretty darn well.
Yeah, I would say Houston is going to be the best. I think maybe you say the Lions, if Amon-Ra St. Brown is better, are in that tier. Maybe the Vikings, if they keep doing what they're doing. But other than that, I think we're looking at lesser offenses.
Right.
To give up 19 points and what was essentially, I mean, 13 points for most teams, because most teams don't have Kymie Fairbairn nailing 59-yard field goals like they're nothing.
Christ, yeah. Oh, my God. It was like, from that first drive, it was like, well, if they cross, which makes the 19 points even more impressive, because, like, goddamn, any time they got past midfield, it was within range. So the number of drives that they managed to stop cold was very impressive. And, again, so that's all – and it's this part is a familiar story to Bears fans. Yeah. This defense is going to keep you in – a lot of games. So at 1-1 in September, with the schedule they've got coming up over the next couple of weeks, you know, if this offense can just find some way to get on track to a reasonable degree, does not have to turn into a world beating unit by any means, but you know, start trending towards an average offense. And I still have confidence that that's happening. I do think that they'll get there. Which is, I know that's a dangerous game to play here.
I approve of your optimism, but it is dangerous for you, my friend.
But
before we moved on, I did want to share one funny anecdote before I start pissing on Caleb. We talked about the linebackers. Edwards, not Edmonds, on the very first drive of the game, we had Sanborn in early, and I was like, holy shit, Sanborn got a snap on the first play of the game. Like, what are we doing? It was like the third or fourth play. And Stroud calls the running back to go out wide. And TJ Edwards goes out over there, and he's obviously covering him. And he looks over at Tremaine Edmonds, and he's making the side eye. And his hands are kind of, like, shaking, and he's kind of like, guys, he's going to throw the fucking slant. Guys, I can't do this. Like, you can see it in his eyes. He's like, they know what's happening. I can't cover this guy. And then they come out, and the running back runs a slant, and he gets a first down. You just see TJ Edwards like, someone else got to do that. Like, we need Kyler back in here. And then Jack Sanborn kind of disappeared for a while from the game because TJ just can't be doing that.
Yeah, I think they fit the run again. They fit the run in nickel almost better than they expected, and they ended up using base even less than because I mean that's what Bobby Slovic wants to do. He wants to run the ball, get you into your base defense, and then play action you to death off of that. Yeah. So them being able to stay in nickel as much as they did was huge.
We didn't talk about the run defense. This is a team that ran for almost 200 yards in week one against decent defense, which we're going to see next week. And we completely shut them down on the ground. They wanted to run the ball.
It's almost become boring to talk about. People just don't even acknowledge it. But like this was the NFL's number one run defense last year. Yep. And as long as Billings and Coe are still there, they're still in Sweat too. I mean, they give up nothing on the ground.
Yeah,
should be kind of interesting this week against Indianapolis too, because Indianapolis obviously they want to lean on the run with Richardson having his issues, and also just Richardson a strong run game is kind of always going to be what the Anthony Richardson experience is. So it'll be interesting to see how they defend Indianapolis there too, and try to catch Tony Richardson in those obvious passing situations where he struggled a little bit in pure drop back game. The defense has been great. I don't expect them to get any worse from here on out. They should keep you in every ball game, and it's going to come down to how quickly the offense can get its shit together.
Agreed.
So now as we transition to talking about how the offense can get its shit together, here's a guy that – we'll talk about Caleb Williams first this time because I think even though it was obviously shaky at times, even though there was obvious frustration, even though the sacks were terrible, I think we would both kind of agree that this was a marked improvement for Caleb over week one. And I think we would agree he was the bright spot. And I think, you know, the interceptions, the first one to DJ, correct read, just didn't get quite enough under it. The second interception to Kmet, that was Caleb Williams being like, oh, this is not the Pac-12. Frustration because he had just broken the sack, had his jersey ripped. Was second and goddamn 15 yet again. Just going to try to make a play. And those were the kinds of – those interceptions were the kind of plays I think we both kind of expected from Caleb as he learns as a rookie and aren't really fazed by. Like, that is the kind of play, you know, every playmaker like that, your Josh Allens, they all have to have those moments where they're like, I can't try that one here, can I? Okay.
Yeah.
Because they've been making that throw their whole life, and it's no one's ever stopped it before.
The difference between C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams in this game really came down to C.J. Stroud not panicking, right? Mm-hmm. Not being like, I have to score here. You could feel it in Caleb, him thinking, this is 16-10, it's within one score, but if I keep pushing this on my defense and they get a field goal from this freak who could kick a 65-yard field goal whenever he wants – suddenly it's two scores, and then I have to throw every down, and I am already getting hit every play. Yeah. I have to score here, and what C.J. Stroud learned last year, as you pointed out to me, to calm me, to soothe my spirits, C.J. Stroud's first game last year went very poorly for him.
9 points, five sacks.
Right. So part of this is C.J. Stroud has learned, it's a close game, but nothing happening on the other side of the ball is guaranteed. What I have to do is recognize that my offensive line is not performing adequately, which the Texans' offensive line wasn't. He was getting harassed the whole game as well. Not as badly as Caleb, but he was getting harassed by a very good defense. And CJ took the NFL perspective. He said, I'm just going to play within myself and hope the defense wins, because if I push it, I'm going to make a mistake that loses the game.
Yeah.
And what Caleb said was, I have to go out here and win the game. It's all on me.
Yeah.
And what we got was a bunch of, I'm going to throw off one leg as hard as I can. Whoopsie. Yeah. That was into triple coverage kind of passes.
But again, I mean, it's not the kind, here's the thing. if you continue to put Caleb Williams in third and 15, do I think those throws will keep happening to some extent? Yes.
Yeah.
But I think it's kind of important here to note that you could, theoretically, try to avoid putting the kid in third and 15 because you kept seeing it. The best drives...
You could.
The best drives that they had all game long, and this is something that Nate Tice has pointed out too, like, they have Caleb, and I can't say this on Twitter because the Commanders fans are already trying to box score scout me and stuff, but when you watch, like, Washington and what Washington's doing with Jaden Daniels, it's very basic. It's very, like, 1-2-3 balls out. It's one read, and then he's scrambling. It's the completion percentage looks great. But there's a reason that they didn't score a single touchdown in any of their red zone drives. Like, it's very, like, Washington is very much like, Jaden, don't get hit. That's your first priority more than anything. Meanwhile, Caleb is setting the protections at the line. He's calling out everything. He's real big boy quarterbacking. Like, they have handed this kid the keys to the car.
Yeah.
And the drives where they did well were mostly the drives where Caleb, they got the play call in early enough, which is a continually freaking problem with Shane Waldron. He's doing the Matt Nagy thing where they're not getting to the line until there's like 6-7 seconds left on the clock, and it doesn't give Caleb enough time to really, and that's where some of the false starts, some of the delay of games were coming from. So they got to get the play call in earlier. But Caleb was setting the protections well. He was mostly deciphering what D'Amico was sending. There's a couple of great examples. Like I said, Nate Tice on Twitter, he had a nice thread basically of all the times Caleb correctly identified the blitz. Depressingly, the number of times Caleb would be like, all right, I've got five, they're bringing five, I'm good to go. And then one of their five got through instantly anyways, was extremely frustrating. But like this, the kid's eyes, just like we talked about last week, the kid's eyes are where they're supposed to be, which was even more impressive this week than last week. Because fucking D'Amico Ryans threw the kitchen sink at him schematically. There were zone blitzes, there were sim pressures, there were twists. They threw everything at the kid. For the first half especially, he was not phased at all. He was very calmly executing. The frustration mounted as the offensive line collapsed as more and more second and 15 started happening. But like these are the things, I said it last week, the good process will eventually yield good results. These are the things that were my biggest questions about the kid coming out of college. Can he play within structure, operate on time, recognize these blitzes? Can he do that? And through two games, and he's already passed that test, in my opinion. Like, I trust that this kid knows what he's looking at. The rest will come in time. And I think the deep balls, you know, it was funny, last week he was too amped up, he was overthrowing everything. This week, the deep passes that he missed, you could tell he kind of took a little too much off. So, you know, he's still calibrating, and that's normal. Like, Joe Burrow had the best deep passing season in college football history his last year at LSU, and then as a rookie was just an abysmal deep passer, and people were like, what happened to Joe Burrow? They get Ja'Marr Chase, which obviously is a big factor in being able to throw the ball deep. But also, Joe Burrow just gets a year of experience, gets the timing down. His year two, he throws for almost 5,000 yards and goes to the Super Bowl. Like, it takes time to work out NFL deep. The windows are different. The receivers are different. The drops are different. It takes time to calibrate that. So I'm not really concerned there. I'm very pleased still with like what he's doing at the line. I'm pleased with what he's seeing. I do think ultimately, for Caleb at least, this probably clicks sooner than later. Is that how you're feeling after this week? You and I were a little more harmonious in our Caleb discussion this week, I felt like.
Yeah, again, I'm not projecting forward. I'm also not counting against him what happened last week. So just going off what happened in this game, what I would say is I saw an extremely functional quarterback in the first half, a very good quarterback. A quarterback who was playing comparably to C.J. Stroud in the first half. They were unabashedly comparing the two on the broadcast and at halftime and saying, like, this is a heck of a duel. The Bears looked like they belonged on the field with the Texans. It looked like, you know, this is a matchup between two very good teams. The offenses are both struggling to block the defenses, but the quarterbacks are getting run all over the field. They're not making mistakes. Looked very good. I was very positive on Caleb after the first half. as we got deeper into the second half, kind of like we alluded to before, he wanted to make a play. And he was like, well, this whole game, I'm just going to get hit. And yes, he did. He was under pressure pretty much every snap in the second half. There was a pressure on Caleb Williams. And eventually he said, you know what, screw it. I have to try something. And when you start to think that in the NFL, especially in the NFL this season, that's it. You're going to throw interceptions. And he tried to do some Caleb Williams shit, right? Like, he went hero mode. He's throwing off one foot. The first pass that should have been intercepted, the first terrible pass, I am going to the right side of the field. I'm on one foot. I'm about to be hit. And now I'm going to throw it all the way across the field down the left sideline. It was one of the stupidest passes I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, uh-oh. And this is the point where I really started to freak out, Kyle, when I was texting. Yeah. Because that, to me, I'm getting flashbacks to Justin against the Browns. I'm like, he's been broken. Because, like, he's given up on the game. He's not going to play the game the right way anymore.
That was not the Bears quarterback that I was thinking of in that moment. It was Jay. Like, you can tell.
Jay would have been on target with that. It would have been on target into a corner. Like,
you can tell when the fuck it demon has entered a quarterback's body. When it's like, I'm going to get hit anyways. Fuck it.
Like, it was that Favre. It was that Brett Favre kind of like, you know what? I'm Brett fucking Favre. I'm letting this go. I'm tired of getting hit, guys. Yeah. We're going to move this ball. Yeah. And it didn't work. And then, he had the two interceptions. They were the one good thing that for sure you have to take away from this game upon watching it a second and a third time. Probably not at the time for Bears fans, right? I know I wasn't like super happy about what was going on while I was watching it the first time, but there's no inaccuracy there right now. And Caleb makes the right read on every play. Every single play, he makes the right read. Even on the interceptions, those dudes were open. He was just on one foot getting hit. He just didn't have it in him to hit the pass, and he needed to say, I can't do this. Like, I just need to throw it out. We need to punt. We have Torrey Taylor. It's fine. And he's not at the point in his career where he's going to make that decision right now, damn it. He wants to beat C.J. Stroud on Sunday night. He wants to beat the Texans. He wants to be 2-0. I understand that completely. Again, like, great first half. Second half, he got frustrated and he let it loose. But compared to week one, huge gains in accuracy, which is really all I was looking for, because I was terrified after week one. Like, is that going to carry over? Is he just going to be erratic? The answer is no. He's reading great. He's reading the play before the play happens. Great.
Yeah.
It's just.
And again, I mean, this was, and not just was he deciphering these blitzes at the line and getting things lined up. And again, we'll talk about the offensive line here in a second and why they fucked that up. But, like, this is from D'Amico. This is D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans working with a full toolbox of outstanding players, two Pro Bowl edges. D'Amico Ryans was doing absolute sicko shit. And not once did I feel like the kid was just fucking fooled. He saw what he was seeing. He saw what he was doing. That kind of stuff. Like I said, they're not. I mean, mostly because they can't. But they're not hiding behind the crutch of play action. They are not. This is true drop back pass, decipher at the line, make a damn read, all stuff that the last guy really struggled with that the staff desperately tried to keep him from ever having to do if they could avoid it. They're trusting Caleb. Like, this coaching staff, and we talked about how all summer long the reports were that they were throwing every blitz at him because they knew game plans like this were coming against Caleb. They worked on blitz recognition and everything else with Caleb. So they trust this kid. I do think, I think it hits sooner than later with him. Now, the one obstacle that's going to keep it from hitting, I don't think, is a Caleb Williams obstacle. It's a Bears offense obstacle. So, Travis, you've looked at the film.
Yeah.
You like to break down offensive line. I'm guessing you didn't like breaking down the offensive line this week, but
yeah.
You know, you've been the pessimist lately, but you seemed like you maybe thought there was some light at the end of the tunnel here, potentially, or the potential for light at the tunnel. The sparks of a light at the end of the tunnel. Talk to me about the offensive line. Talk to me. I am contemplating ending it all. Get me off the bridge, Travis.
I mean, so first of all, it needs to be said, this was an all-time awful offensive line performance.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is coming from two people who have seen what we thought were the worst offensive lines in the history of the NFL. Like, we thought it really couldn't get worse than most of these Bears offensive lines. And this was, I'm kind of at a loss for words. Everything went wrong during this game. While I was watching it, I was like, okay, the offensive line is bad, but Caleb is going to have to deal with bad offensive lines sometimes. Nothing's perfect. CJ Stroud is getting harassed too. You know, when I went back and watched it again, it was just like, there's nothing there, right? And you find out that Caleb's time to throw was 2.5. And
yeah,
it
I'm glad
really
you,
drives
I'm glad home. You brought that up, because I'm sure there's probably some people who were listening to this and were like, you guys said this offensive line wasn't the problem and it was Justin. I mean, there's a whole lot of that on Twitter. When it was Justin Fields, you didn't want to blame the offensive line. And that's – I looked this up because I knew that was coming. I knew right now Caleb Williams overall has a 2.81 time to throw. That is – I think tied for like 16th in the NFL, literally dead on for average. He is not holding the ball. And against Houston, it was like 2.5 seconds, which again, Luke Kuechly of all fucking people was like, he can get rid of the ball faster. And I want to point out that 2.4 seconds time to throw is like literally late career Tom Brady time to throw. Like, I think it's not quite reasonable to expect any rookie to be processing as fast as Tom Brady after 20 years of NFL experience. And if that is your solution, rather than just the offensive line could do their damn job, we've got real problems. And then also, I've had my quibbles with ESPN's pass block win rate metric before, because it can kind of be gamed by Max Protect, etc. But I do think it's just a handy little snapshot. Last year, in terms of pass block win rate, which measures what percentage of snaps the offensive line held their block at least 2.5 seconds. Last year, the Bears ranked 5th in pass block win rate. This year, they're currently ranked 30th. Only 43% of the time has Caleb had at least 2.5 seconds before the offensive line collapsed, before pressure came streaking in. So a lot of the members of this offensive line are same as last year. But they are currently not playing as well as they did last year. And where the sacks last year were on Justin Fields, who, again, his time to throw last year was 3.39 seconds, which was by far the highest in the NFL. The second worst wasn't even particularly close. Justin Fields did hold the ball too long, was responsible for a lot of his own sacks. Caleb Williams, this was absolutely not a hold the ball too long.
No.
There were, I think, 10 unblocked pressures. There have been 10 through two games. I don't know how many were in week 1 versus week 2. A whole bunch of unblocked pressures, like 4 unblocked sacks in 2 games, which, again, you could point to the quarterback and say, well, if it's unblocked, it's probably because the quarterback didn't ID the blitz. But a lot of times it's not blitzes that are getting through, and Caleb is identifying the blitzes and making sure he has a hat on a hat. The hat that's supposed to be on the hat is missing. They're missing on these stunts. They're not executing the blocking assignment. So again, this is not a Caleb Williams hold the ball too long. This was truly just an abysmal offensive line performance.
Yeah. So all that together, reviewing what the Bears did in this game, the thing that stood out, the thing that gives me hope going forward is, for the most part, they look lost. Like you said, and we brought this up last week when we previewed this game, the Texans love to run stunts. They fucking love that shit. And when they did, just like we saw in the first week, it felt like nobody was home. Nobody was there. Nobody knew where they were supposed to be to grab that guy. They just kind of stood there confused, and then somebody would run past them. Now Caleb's in just like massive danger all of a sudden, with Danelle Hunter, Will Anderson just breathing down his neck. For the most part, it was not offensive linemen getting run over. There were some plays. Darnell Wright got eaten up by Danelle Hunter on one play. Tevin Jenkins got run over one or two times.
I will note that even on that one play where Darnell got absolutely run over by Hunter, and I'm not saying he couldn't have done a better job there, a couple people pointed this out to me, he gives the outside shoulder a little bit like he's expecting a chip from the back, and the chip never materializes. So I think that might be why Darnell, because one thing about Darnell, I was talking about this with a couple of guys. Darnell is kind of the master, in my opinion, of when he loses, he loses, like, or he wins ugly sometimes, where like the initial first step or whatever looks like he's about to be beat, but then he manages to like jab and drive his guy around, and before you know it, the ball's out and he's won the rep, even though you felt like he was losing the whole time. It's right. Very rare to see him just like instantly get mollywopped like he did on that Daniel Hunter rep, or that Daniel Hunter rep. And again, a couple of people pointed out the way he kind of lines up, the way he kind of gives up a shoulder that he normally doesn't. A lot of people felt like, and looks like based on the play call and what Caleb does at the line, that the back was supposed to chip and didn't get the message.
Yeah. So very little of that, honestly. And yeah, just very strange from Darnell. He has not given that up to much better pass rushers. In fact, he's made Will Anderson look stupid before in college. And in this game, he did very well against Will Anderson, which isn't shocking. The big issue here is just, it doesn't seem like the offensive line knows where to go. It doesn't seem like they know what to do. They look lost a lot. They looked lost in the Tennessee game multiple times, but in this game, they were lost on almost every play. In the second half, it was every play. You know, in the first half, they did okay. The second half, it all went downhill. So I kind of went out and I tried to find something. I was like, how did the first year of Waldron's offense in Seattle look? Did the offensive line have a bunch of struggles? Did they struggle compared to the year before and the year after? The answer is no, not really. But the deal was that Seattle offensive line was very different. A lot of veterans, a lot of guys who had been there for a while, blocking the same scheme, moving into Waldron, who was kind of just building his scheme that first year, bit of a different situation there. So I was like, well, I don't think this is that. I went through the data of Waldron last year. Did he have a huge problem last year? Are guys succeeding more this year? Some of them are, but those were rookies or second-year players. Seattle now has a very young offensive line. So I can't really pull any data from that. So I'm like, all right, I can't find anything conclusive here or there. So what could the problem be with the Bears line? If you're lost, the first thing I'm going to look at is, because I'm a Bears fan, how many offensive coordinators has your quarterback had over the last 5 years, right? Something like that. Here's the situation with the Bears offensive line. The reality is our left tackle has been in the league for 3 years. So he has had three different schemes in 4 years, right? Southern Utah, he had Getsy, now he's got Waldron. Our left guard, Tevin Jenkins, has been moved all over the offensive line. As a left guard, he's played two different schemes in 2 years, right? Solidly left guard. Our center is Coleman Shelton. He's not supposed to be there. You know what, dude? He's not supposed to be here. He shouldn't be as bad as he is right now, but I really can't pass judgment on him. But Nate Davis, again, here's a guy who has had three different offensive line schemes in 3 years. Tennessee, and then Getsy, and now he's on to Waldron. And then we go over to Darnell Wright, who was a rookie last year, Tennessee the year before. Now he has a new coordinator. So again, three blocking schemes in 3 years. There has been a ton of turnover for these guys. We have some young guys on this line. They have had to eat a lot. And when I looked into Waldron's scheme and what it's become over time, he isn't like a lot of offensive coordinators in that his run game and his pass game do not have consistent blocking assignments. He doesn't have like one blocking scheme and that's what he does for an entire game, or at least for most of a game, right? You can kind of bank on it for 90%. He's going to pull something else out of his hat very rarely. He does different things. He runs different blocking schemes. You can't bet on it being the same thing from play to play. And that makes a thing complex. And for these guys to have this many schemes in this many years, and then to have this thing thrown at them that is more complex just because there's more of a question of what you have to do play to play. As for another person like in Getsy's scheme, where you're like, well, I know in general what the theory behind this blocking scheme is. I do it all the time. Even if I can't exactly remember what I'm supposed to do on this play, as long as I follow the theory, I'm going to be in the right spot. You can't really do that here. And then you add on the final nail in the coffin, which is this preseason went very weird for the offensive line specifically. There were offensive linemen, different ones out every single day in camp. Nate Davis had his usual issues, but everyone else was missing time. If it wasn't one guy, it was another. If it wasn't two guys, it was three guys. There was no time for them to come together as a unit.
I believe
they are learning on the fly.
I believe right? Braxton, Darnell, I mean, this the current starting five has only practiced together. They only practiced together for, like, I think maybe the last 2 weeks of camp total.
Yep.
Like, again, it's kind of back to the reverse coping, because Bears fans have made these excuses before. It's a new scheme. It's this, it's that, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I understand you've made those excuses before and they turned out to just be excuses. But sometimes the simplest explanation, when there are execution errors all over, when guys that you know have played better than this before are currently making these kind of lapses, sometimes it really is as simple as, like, they're all new at this. If the quarterback is new at this. The wide receiver is new at this. The offensive line is new at this. And you know, if you want to think of it as an offense that looks similarly disjointed, the Packers last year, early on, had a couple new offensive linemen. We talked about before week one last year, they only had like a grand total of like 17 or like 40 career catches between them with that wide receiver group going in to week one. And if you looked at it, and some of that was Jordan Love being kind of inaccurate and stuff, but like a lot of it was, you know, there'd be option routes where the guy's wide receiver would pick the wrong one, quarterback, and that happened. That's happening with Caleb and Rome right now. They keep taking opposite opinions on where we should go where on an option route. It looks so awful when there's one critical mistake being made. And it looks so awful because it's being just the guy making the critical mistake is often not the same guy on every play. So there's not just one guy you can zero in on and figure it out. But at the same time, because so much of it is execution based, because so much of it is mental, you have to think it gets better from here as they get reps, as they get comfort in the system, as they figure out what they need to be doing. And if they don't, I think, yeah, I mean, if you're still talking this, if the offensive line looks this bad 2-3 weeks from now, I would have to think Chris Morgan, who somehow survived the scheme change last year, is probably the guy that goes on the block here, because, you know, it's kind of weird that Shane Waldron didn't get to bring in his own offensive line coach to begin with. But you'd think if it's clear that this arranged marriage between the two of them is not working, you'd think they'll get Morgan out there pretty quickly and let Shane promote someone that he feels is familiar with how he wants things done. But yeah, I mean, it could just be as simple as they need the damn reps. And that's not to give anyone a pass, because, for example, Nate Davis, you know what would have been a good way to get these fucking reps, buddy?
Yeah. Is to
practice. Yeah. Get on the goddamn field. And some of this also goes to Matt Eberflus, too, because I have always felt like, you know, the last 3 years, they have taken a pretty pretty light approach with injuries in training camp. Like, guys get banged up and they err on the side of caution, they rest them immediately. And part of me understands that, but then at the same time, we have seen these consistent, just awful offensive starts the last three Septembers before they start to figure something out 4 or 5 games in. And, you know, that was maybe fine when you were developing and had no expectations of winning, but you cannot just punt on the month of September forever and treat it as a second preseason. You're going to have to figure out some, you might have to start having some guys practice like Nate Davis practice when they've got when they're nursing a sore calf or whatever. And you're going to have to make some hard decisions about when to push guys a little bit, maybe earlier than you want to push them, because like you need these reps. Like they clearly haven't repped this stuff enough. And I do think it gets better. And obviously also, again, these were two brutal matchups. The Titans were several dumbass Will Levis turnovers away from beating the Jets, too. They mostly held the Jets in check. They held the Jets under 300 total yards. They were very good defensively. Yep. Again, Sweat and Simmons were a tough matchup for the Jets. Like that's a good defensive line in Tennessee. That's a good defense in Tennessee. That's a great defense in Houston. They were two horrible matchups off the start for an offensive line that's trying to find its way. Now, I'm not blowing smoke entirely up your ass. We talked about how we expected this to be like the 21st best offensive line in the NFL. Like, I'm not saying that this is going to be a top 10 unit. It should be what it was last year or a little better, which was a unit that's not going to get a guy killed, that you can do some stuff with. It shouldn't be this dysfunctional. And yeah, also,
Go ahead.
I know we were very frustrated with DeAndre Swift, the DeAndre Swift runs, and it felt like the offensive line's letting him get contacted in the backfield. Olin Kreutz did a really good breakdown. A couple guys pointed out, like, he's cutting up too soon. He's cutting inside. He's taking the wrong – there's stuff that is blocked up correctly, and he's the one that's cutting inside too quickly or cutting outside too quickly and not hitting the hole where he's supposed to. That's where I'd like to see Shane Waldron maybe just get Khalil Herbert in there a little bit more, or even Roshan Johnson, and just like run the damn ball between the tackles a little bit, get under center, get downhill, boot off of that. You know, second and seven is better than second and 13, man. Like, those outside runs right now are just not working. There are too many moving pieces. It's not synced up right now. Just get out. I know DeAndre Swift's not a between the tackle runner. That's part of why we were kind of on that contract to begin with.
Yeah.
So just, you know, goddammit, get under center and run the damn ball. Just run it up the gut.
That's right.
Play some goddamn bar football.
Just don't be in second and 14 as often as we were during this game, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I wanted to say, like, in regards to people saying, well, this has to be coping, like, they did horrible. It was an awful showing by the offensive line, right? Here's the last reason, I guess, for why I don't think this is a personnel issue for the Bears is if these guys were old, right? If they were older dudes, if this was a John Tate, Reuben Brown, Orlando Pace situation, right? I would be like, yeah, man, like, they got old. That's just it. Sometimes you get old and you suck now. Bam. Like, it's easy. If last year they were bad, but we thought they were developing, right? And we were like projecting development into this season. Then yeah, I would say, okay, we're fucked. They're not developing. It's a must-defer situation, right? Where we thought, wow, looked pretty decent given the situation, but now he's never going to get better. This isn't that situation either. We know how good these guys are. We know that Braxton and Darnell Wright, even if they just stick around exactly where they were last year, are exactly middle of the pack at their positions. They are exactly like the 16th best left tackle, 15th best right tackle in the league, even if they don't develop at all. We know that Tevin Jenkins last year was a top five left guard in the NFL when he was healthy. And we know that Nate Davis has in the past been a totally crombulent right guard. Like, this isn't a situation where I'm saying, oh man, everybody just needs to get right, even though there's no historical suggestion right. or evidence that you're they've not, ever been good. And like, oh, we're projecting that the young guys will get better, blah, blah, blah. These are good players.
This isn't 2010. You're not talking yourself into DeMarcus Webb taking a leap. You're not talking yourself into Frank Omiel being somebody who's ever. You were talking about five guys who are all under 30, so nobody should be over a hill right now.
Yep.
About five guys who are under 30 who have all been average or close to average in Coleman Shelton's case, or better NFL starters as recently as 1 year ago. You would expect some positive regression towards the mean as you go along, especially when, like you said, so many of it, it's just meant, not that there haven't been a couple places where guys got whooped, but like, so much of it's execution. And again, some of it is not even the offensive line. Cole Kmet, I don't know why Cole Kmet was asked to block Will Anderson, but Cole, the you could have at least, Cole, you could have at least like made contact with him. Like, you could have, like, whiffing entirely was not your only option there. The backs, like I said, you know, the Danielle Hunter sack against Darnell Wright, like, it felt like there was supposed to be a chip there that wasn't executed.
It almost gives you hope to an extent, right? Because it's so consistently that just dudes are confused. They're just not exactly sure where they're supposed to be.
And even just like, okay, think of the Cleveland game, Justin's rookie year. Think of how bad that looked.
Yep.
Think of the idea that it couldn't possibly, like, no recovery from that. But, like, even by the end of his rookie season, Justin Fields had a couple 200, he had that game against the Steelers. He had a 200-yard game. They managed to find something functional that year. Even in 2010, which I did just reference, the Giants game, the total fucking disaster, the 9 sacks in the first half, Cutler concussed. You'd think, like, this offensive line has no hope. They found a unit that managed to somewhat work. They managed to figure out how to run the ball. They managed to score, I think, like 27 points per game in the second. Like, it is hard to sustain production this bad on the offensive line. It really is. It will equalize too. I really believe that. And if it doesn't, you fire Chris Morgan into the fucking sun. Because, holy shit, dude.
All right. I mean, there's some ephemera in this game that I want to talk about, which we haven't talked about too much this week. The referees sucked. Blast me with ephemera. The referees were ass this game.
It was,
Roshan Johnson got punched in the face despite not being in on a play, and they didn't throw a flag. We've got interference happening. We've got the refs huddling for 90 seconds and then deciding to throw a roughing the passer penalty, except I guess you can jump in the air and throw your forearm into Cole Kmet's helmet and knock him out.
Fine.
And that's not targeting. Like, that's not a penalty.
That's not an issue. Yeah.
Caleb Williams can slide and you can hit him and it's fine. Just get up, run the next play, buddy. I am not a guy who gripes about the refs usually. And I give it to the Bears if they get favor in a game. I'll be like, wow, we've got away with one there. This was, I understand the Texans got called for a lot of penalties in this game. They could have been called for a lot more. They were over the place in this
game. You know, and I really thought Caleb Williams would get the flag benefit a little bit. I really did, because I mean, like, he's got all this hype around him, and the NFL, like, the NFL desperately, as an entity, desperately wants Caleb Williams to be good. The Bears will be a nonstop moneymaker for the league if Caleb Williams is good. I kind of thought he'd get a little more protection than he did early on. So far, not the case. That was weird. There was some weirdness there.
And then we got to talk about it. Matt Eberflus made the two worst challenges, most useless challenges I've ever seen. It didn't end up hurting us in the end, really. But, like, what? I kind of get why he threw the second one, because Kyler Gordon was basically doing backflips, throwing a fit on the field, and you could see Eberflus didn't really want to throw it, and he threw it kind of in disgust.
The Kyler Gordon one
felt like doing it for his guy. He was so
the Kyler
adamant.
Gordon one was, I think that was a case where he was like, look, I know the odds are against me here, but the momentum shift from being right is so high.
Yep. There was clear video evidence he didn't get touched and he ran to the end zone. So if it got overturned, that was a touchdown for the Bears. So I understand it. The first one.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It was the worst challenge I've ever seen thrown. He was in by like 3 yards.
Yeah.
Baffling challenge.
I didn't even like, it was one of those ones that just broadcast you watching it live. I didn't even like the possibility of a challenge wasn't even in my mind because
he
had so clearly completed the process of the catch before he went out of the bounds. Like, I didn't even begin to question it.
In front of them.
Anyways.
Oh boy. He gets a pass from me because this defense could quite frankly be the best defense in the NFL by the end of the year. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, please don't challenge that ever again.
As it stands right now, I mean, if Daryl Taylor keeps this up, like, I don't know that they need to make their annual deadline move for another edge rusher. But at the same time, if this offense really starts to click and you start to go on a little run here, you start to think, like, man, how lethal would they be, though, if they did make that move for one more just outstanding edge rusher at the deadline. Like, you could go for the kill shot already if Caleb's
don't the Panthers have a pretty good guard? Would they take a second round pick for a guard, do you think?
Oh man. Like, you know, can we talk about the Bryce Young thing just a little bit? Because
we have to.
I mean, I don't want to crow too much because at the same time, neither one of us thought it would be this bad. I think we both were like, I think we both comped him to like tiny Andy Dalton, which is not the end of the world, but like we both said, you know, if you were, and I chickened out a little bit, and maybe I won't end up wrong. You know, Anthony, we're going to see Anthony Richardson this week.
We're going to have fun with Anthony Richardson.
We might, yeah. Eberflus could put that kid in the blender. He really could.
Yes,
or
he could.
Tony could just go off randomly because that's what freaks of nature do. You know, it's always hard to tell what you're going to get from him. But I didn't have the courage quite to make Anthony Richardson QB2 over Bryce in my book. But I said, if I was the Panthers, you bet your ass that I'm taking Stroud or I'm taking Richardson over Bryce. And because Bryce just does not have, in any world, Bryce doesn't have that ceiling.
Right.
The floor ended up being a lot lower than we thought. And it's been funny to watch people be like, the Panthers put shit around him. This is not how you develop a kid. Put on the damn film, guys. There's nothing to develop. Like, every problem he has right now is built around the fact that he's 5'9". Like, the Panthers allowed 4 pressures on Sunday. 4. That's it. What do you think Caleb Williams would have done with only 4 fucking pressures? Deontay Johnson's open. Adam Thielen, somehow, at his advanced age, is open sometimes. And he's just not, literally not seeing it. And not in the Justin Fields way, where he's looking at it and he doesn't know what he's seeing. I mean, he quite literally can't see past his linemen enough. He's bounce passing checkdowns, for God's sake. He's hopping up in the air to throw the damn checkdown. And we need Caleb to go off here because that's already a bottom 5 trade in NFL history. But if Caleb turns out to be a dude, that goes straight to the front of the line, I think, is the worst trade in NFL history.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think at this point it already is. Even with Caleb, if he's just mediocre, or if we lose him, we still got Darnell Wright, DJ Moore, the second round pick coming up this year.
Like, Tyree Stevenson.
He has been worse.
Didn't they turn the 4th round pick that they got from trading down to get Darnell Wright? Didn't they trade that 4th round pick for Keenan Allen? Like, I think that's what happened. Pretty sure.
Maybe.
You could argue the Bears got DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Tyreek Stevenson, a second round pick that's sure looking like it might be pick 33 this year, and Caleb Williams from that trade. So, yeah, it's rough. It's rough out there.
You said you don't want to toot our own horn. I do. I want to toot my horn because, okay, so Kyle, here's the deal. The way we go
about... Well, you can't toot too hard, though, because you didn't have CJ QB1 that year.
I did.
Other
Kyle,
handsome members of this podcast.
What I said was, if I'm the Panthers, I take CJ Stroud first overall. But without ambiguity, if there were no teams, I would take Anthony Richardson, yes. So take that how you will. Take that how you will. However, yes, I did have Bryce Young.
Take that as the hemming and hawing of a bitch, folks. That's how you take it.
I hemmed and I hawed there. I pulled a Kyle. That's what I like to say. I equivocated. But yeah, I mean, Kyle, when we go over quarterback prospects, what usually happens is I watch a bunch of tape. You look at numbers first, and then we kind of meet in the middle. And you start watching tape. I ask you for numbers. We discuss things. When we come together at that point, we first start talking about a guy from our opposing directions, and we both say, God, I just don't fucking see it. Have we ever been wrong in that case, in that situation? Like, it's Zach Wilson, it's Bryce Young, it's Jaden Daniels at this point, so we're going to wait and see on that one. Whenever we come together and we're like, is everybody wrong or are we insane? That quarterback, it seems to be duped. And Bryce Young was in that boat. We just both, every time we talked about Bryce Young, it got more negative. It was like, does he do things well? Like, what does he do well? What are the positives from this guy? Like, yeah, he gets some completions, but none of this is translatable to the NFL. He's much shorter than other people think, but he also, whenever he gets outside the pocket, he has to set his feet before he throws the ball, and he's not going to have that kind of time. He is so bad under pressure. Like, he cannot create. We spent a lot of time in the early days of the Renewed podcast here talking about how the whole media narrative around Bryce Young, his strength was allegedly that he could create. And I just kept saying, like, that is his weakness. He can't create. He has to be set. He has to have a perfect arm angle to throw the ball. He can't be disrupted. And all we have seen in his NFL career is even the slightest hint of anything happening to him. And he's doomed. It just doesn't work for him. And it is worse than I thought. I predicted that he would have a very bad rookie year. I thought it would be disastrous. Just because of the team he had around him and because, like I said, he doesn't deal with pressure well. But I thought he could improve after that. And the fact is, he might look worse now. He has been awful, awful these 2 games. He's just, nothing is working for him.
Yeah,
I mean, It feels like he's been broken, right? Like Justin Fields was.
A lot of people were quick to blame Frank Reich and his offense last year and then Bryce, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I actually thought Frank Reich did... I thought Frank Reich did the only thing you can do with Bryce Young, which is put him in the gun and spread it out and, like, give him, you know, put him in the gun so he can see over. You know, Dave Canales, I think, is a fantastic coach, but, like, his whole thing is downhill, under center, play action. It's very good offense for Baker Mayfield. It's not a good offense for Bryce Young. He gets under center, he can't see a fucking thing.
Yeah.
He can't see. Like, that's all there is to it. Like, sometimes it's, it, like, there are, you know, it was so funny how people would be like, people said Russ was too short. And I'm like, Russ is 5'11". People said Kyler was too short. Again, 5'10", 5'11". And again, both of those guys, yeah, they have to play outside the pocket a little bit more than normal when things get muddy. Both of them, elite athletes, dense, can take a hit, and just have rocket launcher arms, can throw. If you're going to play outside the pocket a lot, you have to be able to throw without having to have both feet planted on the ground. Mm-hmm. Bryce can't, they can. It's a huge difference. We said this, the Kenny Pickett paradox is what I'm going to call it. The guy who relied on creation in college, but doesn't have the tool bag to create in the NFL, that's the worst kind of quarterback to have, because he will try to rely on that creation in the NFL and just be awful at it. Meanwhile, he's passing up stuff in structure that's the only kind of stuff he should be able to hit.
Right.
Anyways.
We kind of had to talk about Bryce. I feel terrible for him because I didn't...
I don't. Who cares?
I don't want him to have an awful NFL career. I didn't think he would have a totally awful NFL career. But how do you come back from this, right? Like, people are saying he can. People are saying, oh, this doesn't mean it's over. Guys, I think it's over, like Zach Wilson was over.
Yeah, it's never been more over. No, so the last thing we got to do, we talk about the Colts coming out here.
We got to.
This should be a get well game for the Bears offense. It really should. I mean, I don't expect all of the execution errors and stuff to be cleaned up in 1 week. But the Colts right now are giving up almost 200 yards per game on the ground, and they're not going to have DeForest Buckner, who has three of the only four pressures that they've managed to get from their interior defensive line through two games. Buckner's out.
Yep.
The Bears offensive line, if they can't run the ball a little bit here, if they can't get under center and do some play action here, it's not going to happen. So this needs to be a get well game for the Bears offense. I think they can do it. I think these wide receivers, especially, I would think Keenan Allen, since he was really close to playing this week, should probably be back against the Colts. They should have a full set of wide receivers, hopefully with another week in the books and another week away from that injury, will be doing a little bit better too. There should be some more free release, more quick, easy stuff for these wide receivers against this defense. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, the Bears should stuff the run as they have been doing. And I think Matt Eberflus will make it very hard for Anthony Richardson to read things out. And he's kind of struggling with that right now, which is, I mean, neither of us is out on Tony
no.
by any means. But we tried to say this offseason, as people who like Tony, that people were getting too far down the tracks, that this was a dude who only had 455 dropbacks in college, who only had like five games before he got hurt last year, who was always going to take time. Like, not a snap that Anthony Richardson takes before year three in the NFL, in my opinion, should truly be counted. Unless, you know, if it's consistently terrible, no signs of progress, like a Zach Wilson, then yeah, sure, you start to get concerned. But I wouldn't say there have been no signs of progress. He's made some amazing plays through two games. He also made some head-ass plays, you know? That's going to happen. That's going to be the ride. I think the Bears should be able to stuff the run, put the kid in third and long, put him in a true expected pass situation where he struggled. Don't let him rely on the RPI or the OPO. Oh, my fucking God. Don't let him rely on the RPOs. Make him think about it. They should have some opportunities there too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we want to go strengths versus weaknesses, the biggest issue we had to worry about was DeForest Buckner, and he is not playing. So offensively for the Bears, every diff between the Bears offense and the Colts defense just goes in the Bears' favor at this point, right? The two best defenders, I guess, left on that line are the edge rushers. They are not spectacular. They can be solid. They are running up against our two best offensive linemen. If there was ever a get right game, it's this one. their secondary should not be able to do anything with the Bears receivers. And with Caleb getting the ball out, if he's going to get it out in 2.5 seconds on average for a game, this should be the game for the Bears. I feel very good about the offense. But the thing is, I don't think the offense needs to score a bunch in this game. I love Tony, as everybody knows, who listens to this podcast. He's my guy, but he's not there yet. He's going to need this whole season to iron things out, to get NFL reps under his belt. And the beautiful thing about Tony, because the strength of the Colts on offense is their offensive line. They played very well last year. They've been very strong this year. The thing about that is Tony has been this flippant with the ball and this inaccurate, despite only getting sacked three times this year. He's not a sack machine. We talked about that a lot in college. He's great at avoiding sacks, but he will absolutely put the ball in harm's way if you chase him, right? He's not always just going to run the ball. He's going to throw it up, and that is what the Bears want. He plays right into what the Bears want defensively. I feel like we are going to end up with multiple defensive touchdowns in this game. If not pick sixes or fumble returns for touchdowns, then interceptions that end up on like in the Colts red zone. Right.
Yeah.
And I just think given that
points
I think
off it's turnovers, however you want to look at it,
it's going to be hard for the Colts to score. It's going to be easy for the Bears defense to score. And it's going to be at the very least a very even matchup between the Bears offense, which is struggling to come together and become a cohesive group. And Colts defense, which just isn't there. It's just, they need more pieces. They lost their best player. It's just, it's not there yet, right? And for that reason, I think the Bears have a strong advantage here. I think they should be favored. I expect them to get what will seem like a fairly easy win. Caleb may not be passing late in this game. It may be some serious handoff to Roschon Johnson action. We'll get to see Roschon a little bit in this game, maybe. Maybe that sounds like it's a bit too optimistic coming off the Texans game. I know a lot of Bears fans had some very negative feelings, even though we lost 19-13 to a very good team. And I'm hoping this game kind of sets everybody right. Like, okay, this team overall is good, and the offense is still getting better. Let's not take another Sunday night game, which maybe embarrassed us in some ways, and blow it out of proportion here. And I'm hoping this game against the Colts kind of sets everybody's heads back on straight.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'm necessarily quite as optimistic as you, but yeah, I think this is a game the Bears should win. I think this is a game where the offense should get somewhat on track. I would favor the Bears here for sure. This is they have a chance here to start getting right. And over the next couple of weeks, they have a chance to really start to get right and maybe build some momentum, build some confidence, you know, get this thing going.
Yeah, if a team ever needed an on-ramp, the Bears got one, right? Because they are rolling into some nice games that shouldn't put a ton of pressure on the offensive line, games that are against easier opponents, I guess, games where the defense is going to be able to dominate.
Right, games where the defense should control the tempo and hopefully, again, keep even if the offense does have a little bit of struggles, help Caleb stay in that mindset where it's like, all right, it's okay to punt here. I will survive a punt. Resist the goblins. Don't be stupid.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, we're at the Colts and then Rams, Panthers, Jaguars, Commanders, and then a game that isn't as easy as it kind of looked at the Cardinals. Now I'm kind of freaked out about that. They're looking pretty good. But yeah, we've got five games coming up.
We'll get there when we get good. There. Yeah, we'll get there when we get there. So,
we came out of the Kyle. We came out of this a lot more optimistic than I thought we would be. Sunday night didn't feel too good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, sometimes you gotta take it to look at. And again, it's one of those things where I said this in the preseason, and I still mean it with Justin Fields. And I don't want to keep bringing everything back to him, but Justin Fields. Every time I looked at the all 22, pretty much every time, even after the good games when I was like hyped to do it, I always felt a little or a lot worse because he'd be like, oh, okay, he made a really cool play with his legs, but there was a dude 20 yard that he should have seen. Oh, he didn't see that. He didn't pick up that. He made a crazy play with his with Caleb. It's like the numbers right now are not, you know, they're in some cases they're just playing bad, but like you watch the film, and it's like, ah, if that was blocked, there was a 3rd and 9. Where Caleb took a sack because of a goddamn free rusher on a stunt that wasn't picked up. Mm-hmm. Rome, who, you know, Rome's kind of struggled a little bit, but Rome cooked his guy on a double move. Could have been a huge play. Caleb's eyes go there immediately, but he doesn't have the time at all to make the throw. It's really disappointing. Like, but you watch Caleb and it's like, he gets it. He's seeing it.
Yep.
So that should click sooner than later. I really believe that.
I agree. All right. Well, you got anything else?
No, I think we're good. Go Bears. Let's get a win over the Colts. Avenge Super Bowl 41. Let's do it.
That's what it's all about. Avenging Super Bowl 41. All right, I'll see you later. Buddy. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving. Won't be back.